Ever wonder how arranged marriages work? Today, we'll get the dish from a Pakistani native. Stay tuned for an intriguing and interesting conversation on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes. Those are my babies. As always, thanks for getting Daddy started today. Mwah. Welcome to Frank Relationships, where we provide a candid, fresh, and frank look into relationships with goals of acceptance, respect, and flexibility. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. You can also download the podcast of this and other archive shows on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Could there be a painful or costly breakup in your future? According to most relationship statistics, the answer is likely yes. But that doesn't have to be the case. In my new and now available book, How to Gracefully Exit a Relationship, I reveal what couples and individuals can do to create a more fulfilling partnership or to end partnerships that aren't working in a friendly manner without suffering the emotional, financial, and family ruin that major breakups can cause. Yep, it's a lot more than a breakup book. How to Gracefully Exit a Relationship guides you through every stage of your romantic partnerships, helping you have the tough, important conversations that most couples avoid. Whether you're beginning a whirlwind romance, seeking to improve your marriage, looking to gracefully separate from your partner, or talking to your teenager about relationships, this is the book for you. Now available at franklove.com or at Amazon. Today's guest is a writer of English fiction and a journalist living in Karachi, Pakistan. She's the author of 4 novels and 2 collections of short stories. Her humorous writings, political satire, and clear-eyed view of social issues have earned her critical praise as a devoted following amongst Pakistanis all over the world. Her humorous writing, political satire, and clear-eyed view of social issues have earned her critical praise and a devoted following amongst Pakistanis all over the world. And this accomplished author is about to have a chat with us over the course of the next hour about arranged marriages. She is Miss Beena Shaw. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank. It's good to be here.
Well, tell us how romantic partnerships are developed in Pakistan.
Well, they are not as straightforward as they would be in the United States. People are generally more in favor of relationships that are arranged by families through introduction or through relatives or through very close friends. So the idea of going to a bar and locking eyes with a stranger and falling hopelessly in love is pretty alien to Pakistani society.
Uh-huh. Now, I was reading your article, and you said that's the case for a certain percentage of Pakistanis. That is not, you know, sometimes you do have teenagers ogling at each other from across the room,
yep,
and that sort of thing. Some people do sneak and date. What would you say? How would you say the percentages break down?
It's difficult to say. I mean, people are people the world over, so of course people get attracted to each other, and they do want to meet, and they do fall in love. But we have to remember that Pakistan is a pretty conservative society. I would say the majority of people, I'm not going to put numbers on it, Frank, but the majority of people go a very conservative route.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a small percentage of, say, perhaps more westernized or perhaps more liberated people that take the romantic marriage route, the truly unarranged, spontaneous, and of their own will and desire.
Are you an advocate of any how to do it one way or the other?
I think that a successful relationship is a difficult and delicate thing to achieve. So either way, any way that it can be accomplished, I have respect for. And there are pros and cons to both sides of the equation.
Okay, give me some. Give me some of the pros and give me some of the cons for both sides.
Okay, well, in the traditionally sort of arranged marriage, and we're talking about arranged, not forced. That's an important distinction to make.
Thank you.
Not talking about a marriage where a woman or a man is married without his or her free consent. But suppose we say that my parents come to me and say, you know, Bina, we have found a wonderful person for you, and we think that this is a good match for you. The families get along very well. The person is quite a good person, seems successful, so on and so forth. What do you say? And it's my choice to say, okay, I'll take a look. I'll think about it. Yes, I will meet this person. And so oftentimes what you have is those kinds of arrangements, because they're carefully vetted by people that are very close to the individual who might be able to take a more objective view rather than with the eyes of infatuation. Sometimes we can say that those marriages end up being pretty stable.
Mm-hmm.
Pakistan has a lower divorce rate, for example. Now, that's not just because marriages are so wildly successful. There are many marriages that don't work out. But people are much less likely to divorce because of societal pressure for people to stay together. Now, when you look at romantic relationships, on the other hand, there's something very, I think, empowering, and there's something very honest and truthful about two hearts that meet each other and match and decide to take a decision to be together. So, you know, there are pros to both, and there are cons to both as well. Perhaps in terms of the romantic relationship, after a couple years, you know, the excitement fades, and then you're left wondering, did I really do the right thing? What is the future? So on and so forth.
What are your thoughts on divorce?
Well, I think that divorce is something that is sometimes inevitable. I think sometimes it's unavoidable. There are clearly marriages where there can be deep problems, when there are issues of, for example, any kind of domestic violence, any kind of abuse, any kind of true incompatibility. I think it's better for couples to separate.
Uh-huh.
On the other hand, I think that's a decision that we have to really, really give a lot of thought. And in Pakistan, of course, there are societal codes. And in Islam, in the religion of Islam, most Pakistanis are Muslim. Divorce is seen as it's permissible, but it is a disliked thing. It is classified not as completely forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
It is classified as permissible but disliked by God.
Uh-huh. And so tell me about the it's clearly an Islamic culture, correct?
Yes, yes it is, by and large.
So give me a paint a picture of the landscape of an Islamic culture in Pakistan.
The Islamic culture of Pakistan is very colored by our South Asian culture. You know that Pakistan used to be part of India until we partitioned from them in 1947. A lot of our cultural mores are not Arab or Middle Eastern. They're actually South Asian.
Uh-huh.
South Asian culture is very strongly based on the family. The family is the unit of all relationships, and everything else is of secondary importance. So when people marry, they marry with the intention of it being for life. Islam itself is more easy in terms of allowing divorce. For example, in Hinduism, I don't think that divorce is allowed at all. Now, Islam isn't like that. It's more flexible. But by and large, you have people living together, staying together, living in extended family units, really maintaining very, very close ties with their families. And that's not just culturally mandated, but also religiously. It is something that we recognize as the root of a strong society.
And what happens if someone or a couple or two people who want to be a couple, travel, let's say they come to the States, get married, and return to Pakistan? How is their relationship perceived?
Do you mean in terms of traveling just to get married?
Just to get married, yes.
They wouldn't go as far as the United States.
Okay.
But what you will see is couples coming to Karachi, the city where I live. It's the biggest city.
Okay.
And it's the most modern. It's the most cosmopolitan city. People come from all over to have a court marriage because the families didn't approve of the match. But they take their lives into their own hands, and they marry. And it is very difficult for them afterwards. There's a lot of family disapproval. There's disapproval of the larger clan or the larger tribe. And therefore, some of these unfortunate couples have to live in hiding, or they have to live ostracized from their family members. So it's very hard for these people.
I think
unfairly so.
I did not gather that people taking their life into their own hands was a part of the equation, but now
they
that you've mentioned
yes.
it, what so because what? One, so let's say a man marries a woman. Is it the woman's family that's after the man? Is it the woman's family that's after the woman? Who's after them to try to take their life?
What happens is that, and this is, again, we're talking about extreme cases. This isn't something that is, you know, it's not every family or every conservative family, but these are extreme cases. And the numbers have risen over the years as women themselves are becoming more empowered and independent and starting to believe that they have the right to choose their own partners as opposed to having to bow to family pressure and choose an arranged marriage partner that they may not necessarily have wanted to marry. So you have these families, these couples, they choose to marry, but it is perceived as a big insult to family honor,
uh-huh.
okay, especially for the woman's family. And so you have women that have to actually, they will take out newspaper advertisements saying, I have married such and such person of my own free will. Do not bring up charges of kidnapping against my husband.
Wow.
We're seeing this actually happen.
Whoa.
So what you're seeing, this is a result really of a society that's in transition,
uh-huh.
coming out of some conservative, very time-old traditions and coming into a more modern view of things, I think.
Now, what you spoke of the pressure that women often feel, but it can't just be the woman. A woman isn't marrying, I assume a woman isn't marrying a woman. So there, a woman is marrying a man, so he has to feel the pressure too. How is it on that side?
It can be equally difficult for the man. I mean, the families can go after the man. The man's own family can be displeased with his choice of a life partner, and they can make things very difficult for him. They can object to the marriage. They can refuse to give their support. That's a devastating thing for a Pakistani to face, is lack of support from their family, disapproval from the family.
Have you spent any time in the States?
I have. I spent 5 years as a child, and then I went back for college and grad school.
All right, let's hear your thoughts on the States, relationships in the States, and I would love to hear your thoughts on Pakistani relationships in the States, whether arranged or unarranged.
You're posing me some really complex questions here, Frank.
Uh-oh.
As far as American relationships go, they have changed from the time of my parents. My parents were in grad school when they took me over to the U.S. for the first time. I was really small. But in those days, things were quite, I would say, not conservative, but more middle of the road. There was still the idea that marriages are meant to last, that you try to stay together. Divorce was just starting to become more and more of a thing, especially in the early 70s, which is when I was growing up in the U.S. as a child.
Uh-huh.
So I think we saw the beginning of the change in American society. And then when I went back as a college student, you know, at least 50% of my college friends, their parents had been divorced. And so their attitudes towards
wow.
marriage were, yeah, so their attitude, and we're talking the early 90s.
Uh-huh.
Their attitudes to marriage were very suspicious. They were not trustful that this might be the right choice for them because they'd seen things go wrong in their parents' lives.
And that's marriage altogether, not even their parents' marriage, just whether they should even get married or not.
They lost faith. They
uh-huh.
lost faith because they saw things go bad, and they lost confidence in themselves about being able to sustain long-term relationships.
So there was still a level of value in sustaining, quote unquote, a long-term relationship. So they saw value in marriage. They just didn't think they could cut the mustard.
Well, the funny thing is that even today, my college friends 20 years on, all of them are married, long-term marriages with children. And so I think they have found within themselves, again, the courage to say, okay, I'm taking a risk. I don't know if it's going to work out, but let's give it a really good shot.
Okay.
And so, you know, with varying success, but I think that marriage in the United States, it endures as something to aspire to. I still haven't seen the rates of, you know, as much as, say, in perhaps Europe, of people refusing to marry and raising families, children without being married. I don't think it's equal to what you see in Europe.
Well, let me hear about Europe.
Well, in Europe, for example, I went to Denmark, back in September, and hardly anybody was married. And if I asked them, they said, well, we don't think marriage is necessary to raising a family, to showing commitment, to showing love. The biggest way of showing love is to actually just have a baby together.
And this was for Pakistanis, or this was for anyone you talked to?
Oh, this was just for anybody in Denmark. The Pakistanis living in Denmark would be much more conservative.
Okay.
Yeah.
I realize we're about to discuss, or I'm going to put on the table, Afghanistan. How close are the cultures between Afghanistan and Pakistan?
Because we share a border that is porous, and the ethnic tribes of Afghanistan and Pakistan are pretty much the same people.
Uh-huh.
You know, when the border was drawn between Afghanistan and Pakistan, it divided tribes and families in half, so it was very artificial in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
We do share a lot of their culture in the northern areas, the ethnic tribes, the Pashtuns, you must have heard of them, the mm-hmm. Pashtuns, that's the major ethnicity. So, and they are probably the most conservative of peoples in Pakistan and, of course, spreading into Afghanistan.
I know, though I don't know the details, I know in the States, or particularly in Washington, D.C., where I live, it's almost like Taliban and Al-Qaeda are synonymous. When people talk, it's like they really believe that they're the same thing. They're hearing people, the Americans are hearing the same thing. But I know that they're not. What is the difference?
Well, Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are political movements, and that has very little to do with society and culture. Now, when you're looking at society and culture, you look at customs, you look at tribal traditions that have existed for thousands of years, for centuries. The Taliban and Al-Qaeda are a modern invention. They're barely 10 or 15, 20 years old.
Okay.
So you're really comparing the wrong things.
All right. So are you saying they are the same? Or they're
Taliban
too different?
Taliban and Al-Qaeda are not the same. Al-Qaeda is basically the international network of, you know, the terrorists that have attacked everywhere from Indonesia to Pakistan to the Middle East to Africa. You know, countries in Africa have been affected. Kenya has been affected. Somalia has been affected. Al-Qaeda is sort of the umbrella group under which many extremist groups operate. And then you have attacks have even taken place in parts of Europe and been claimed by groups that associate themselves with Al-Qaeda.
Got it.
Now, the Taliban themselves are more indigenous. They are the remnants of the Mujahideen that were funded by the United States to fight the Russian occupation of Afghanistan in the 1980s.
Uh-huh.
When that war drew to a close and the United States decided to withdraw their support, they left a gap, a huge vacuum, in which Afghan warlords were fighting for power, and the drug trade was booming. And into this gap, the Taliban, who were pretty much religious students / joined forces with these Mujahideen and took power, and they promised a very tight morality. They promised a very tight control and an end to the egregious crimes that these warlords were committing.
Okay.
So we've just gone through 20 years of history.
Yeah. It just came to me. I just thought I'd ask the questions.
Of course.
The lifestyle of a Pakistani female, please, can you walk us through it from the time she's 2 years old all the way until she passes?
It is extremely difficult to talk about the average Pakistani woman because Pakistan is such a diverse country. You've got women who are born and raised in the most conservative of societies, from which when they are born, they endure harsh conditions. They are made aware of their secondary status. They are not educated. Some of them never go to school. They endure early marriages, pregnancy in early teenagehood, a very
How
difficult
early?
Life bearing, 12, 13.
Wow. And that's not looked down upon.
Puberty. As soon as she enters puberty, she can be considered eligible for marriage.
Okay.
And she'll marry a man who's older than her, maybe 20, maybe 30, maybe 40. It depends. And so she will raise many children. She will lose them. Maternal mortality is high. Infant mortality is high. And that's basically how she'll spend her life.
Uh-huh.
Then you have the other end of the extreme where you've got people who are educated, westernized, traveling abroad, doing all the things that anybody would be expected to do, going to school, going to university, holding down a job. So, as I said, there are real extremes in this society.
Okay. And is teenage pregnancy, particularly when it's with your spouse, is it looked down upon at all?
Teenage pregnancy?
Yes.
No. There's no real awareness of... there are campaigns that are trying to educate people about the dangers of early pregnancy and pregnancy for young teenagers, how it's very brutal on the body, how it's very bad for health of the child as well as the mother. But there's no real societal condemnation of that because it's within a marriage.
Uh-huh. And how about from the man's perspective? Tell me about how it looks for the male from 2 years old on, much as you can, even though I'm sure that's as diverse as for the female.
It is as diverse. I mean, again, a baby boy is born, and it's celebrations all the way. And a boy is seen as a real asset to the family.
Uh-huh.
He's going to grow up. He's going to provide. I beg your pardon. So he is given the privilege. If a family is poor, they will still try to educate the boy. They'll scrape together what they have to send him to school. And he grows up with a few of the restrictions that women face, that girls and women face. You know, there are no limits on where he can go, what he can do, what he wants to do with his life. The limits are more to do with how educated he is and what kind of family connections and background he has. But generally, the men are told and they are raised to believe that they have a superior position.
Mm-hmm. And the females are not celebrated as they're born. Is that correct?
No, I would not say that they are, except in the classes that are educated and have been able to come out of this societal belief that a boy's life is worth more than a girl's. In
uh-huh.
those small circles, a girl is as welcomed as a boy. But I would say for the majority of Pakistan, it's the boy.
Seeing that some of the customs from India have continued to live on in Pakistan. What about bride burning? Is there?
No, that's not something that is an issue in terms of dowry. Are you talking, I'm sorry, are you talking about like
and it had to
dowry?
Do with the dowry, yes.
Oh, okay. We do have cases of that. Numbers are very difficult to pinpoint because the crimes aren't always reported. If it happens, the family will say, oh, it was an accident in the kitchen, so on and so forth.
Wow.
These things do happen.
Okay. And speaking of dowry, tell us about the dowry system.
Well, the interesting thing is that in Islam, there's no such thing as dowry. There is no such thing as dowry. Instead, the groom pays an amount of money as a gift to the bride directly, not to the family, to her. That is her money to keep and to spend or save as she sees fit.
Okay.
And that is part of the official wedding ceremony itself, the giving of the haq meher, it's called. However, because dowry, as you rightly point out, is a cultural practice, across South Asia, when a girl gets married, her husband's family has expectations of what kind of financial package she's going to bring to the marriage. And they can demand many things. They can demand household furniture. They can demand money. They can demand property. They can demand a car. I mean, it can go from a needle all the way up to a car.
Wow.
So, yeah. So it's very complicated. And this is not, officially, it's not required, but unofficially, people really want these things.
Mm. Violence against women in relationships and marriage, is that a big prevailing dynamic, or is it really not something that goes on in Pakistan?
No, the numbers of domestic violence is high. It's been calculated as anywhere from 80 to 90%.
And is domestic violence anything smacking her all the way to beating her up? What is considered domestic violence?
There's no concept of domestic violence because we almost don't even have the words or the terms in which to describe it. There's no phrase domestic violence to our local languages. But it's recognized, I mean, that almost, especially the lower you go down, that's not to say that it isn't a problem amongst the more educated and the more affluent. Of course it is. It's across the board.
Uh-huh. And how is there a political movement around that? And what do you think if they do something wrong?
If they are seen to be or immoral or, you know, flouting authority, I think that's the unspoken justification.
Uh-huh.
But nobody's going to go around saying, yeah, I beat my wife. I'm okay. So proud of it.
And is that a form of...
There's very little implementation of laws. There are Women's Protection Acts. There are laws against domestic violence. There are laws against forced marriage. There are laws against everything. The problem is that of implementation.
Mm.
People just don't take this as a priority. They just don't think it's something that is worth really enforcing.
Is the man beating his wife or smacking her or however is that considered a way of him enforcing of his family?
No, I think that people widely understand that he's frustrated by his powerless situation in life, and he has to take it out on somebody, and it's the poor wife who's in the way. I think that's, by and large, very understood.
Okay. You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we're talking with Bina Shaw, a journalist living in Karachi, 4 novels and 2 collections of short stories. Ms. Shaw, how can our listeners find you and your work?
On the internet. I have a website, www.binashaw.net. I'm on Facebook and on Twitter, so I am easy to find, Frank.
Tell me about your blog.
My blog is something that I've been doing on and off for a very long time in various incarnations. The latest one is called 21st Century Woman. It's a nickname somebody gave me a while back, before the 21st century came, and I just really liked it. So
uh-huh.
I started writing this blog, and before I could even think about it, it started to take on some very strong feminist overtones. And before I knew it, I was writing about all things related to feminism and women's rights and women's issues in Pakistan, amongst other things. But, I mean, I think that's the predominant flavor of this blog.
Okay. And you do consider yourself a feminist?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. And what do you think of feminism in America? How do you see the two as, how do you compare and contrast the two?
I think that there's some interesting conversations taking place about feminism in the United States today, especially between groups of feminists, white women, for example, and women of color. And we're seeing a lot of clashes about how women of color are saying that white feminists don't really understand or refuse to understand the way that feminism and issues of race and religion and power intersect, cross-sectionality, you could call it. So those are some very interesting conversations that I've been following on Twitter and on the Internet and across people's blogs. Of course, that doesn't come into too much of consideration in Pakistan if you're talking about Pakistani feminism. But when you're talking about that we sometimes want from our international feminist sisters, sometimes there can be a lack of that support because they don't understand the cultural issues at play. Or they don't understand Islam, the basic tenets of Islam. They go by what they've been told, which is a lot of misinformation. So sometimes people think, well, you know, in order to empower women, you've got to tell them to get rid of Islam, stop being Muslim, stop following the religion, and that's not compatible for us. We oftentimes, there are feminists in Islam, Muslim feminists, who want to be able to combine their faith with their feminism. And then there are some that don't really care. They're more secular.
Okay.
But there needs to be a deeper understanding of that as well.
We're discussing relationships. Let's discuss nutrition, too. Having trouble getting in your daily dosage of fruits and vegetables? Well, I strongly suggest you trying All Day Energy Greens, a weight loss and dietary supplement all in one. Many of us don't make the time to eat, and if you, like me, fit this profile, All Day Energy Greens can help you by providing a full day's worth of veggies in one spoonful. And you could try it at no risk. If you're not 100% delighted with your results, just send the canister back for a full and prompt refund. No questions asked. You can even return an empty canister for a full refund. Check it out at alldayenergygreens.com or give them a call at 800-218-1379. That's 800-218-1379 for more energy and fewer inches. You noted some of the misinformation, and you also said that they were, you know, some of it had to do with just Islam. Any other misinformation that's of note?
I think that the problem is that really people aren't traveling enough to Pakistan to really see things through their own eyes. I think they're really relying a lot on media distortions. And that's a pity, because the best way to build bridges across cultures is for people really to meet and to sit down together and to talk and to know each other. That's another kind of relationship.
Indeed.
I think it's missing.
And a great point. Tell me, so when if I was out of the country and I wanted to describe the states, I may say it varies. You know, you could go to Seattle. It could be sunny one minute and gloomy and rainy the next. Say the same thing about San Francisco. I could say D.C. has lots of monuments and, you know, whatever. What?
Absolutely.
Tell me about Pakistan. And I have no doubt that there is absolute beauty in Pakistan. Let's hear it.
It's a beautiful country. Where I live, there are the most amazing beaches. You travel half an hour, you're in the desert. You travel 2 hours, you cross the Indus River, you're in some of the most fertile agricultural land you've ever seen, the most productive. We have all sorts of beautiful fruits, mangoes, you name it, apples, bananas. You keep going north, you get to the plains, you go more north, you get to mountains that are more beautiful than Switzerland. So we are an incredibly diverse country. We are the crossroads of history. We have had the Persians, the Greeks, the Indians, the Mughals, the Mongols, all conquerors come through this land. They've left their imprint, but they have been changed completely by coming through here. And that rings true up until today. Any people that come to visit Pakistan, whether it be just for a short holiday or to come and work here for a couple years, diplomats and diplomatic missions, they fall in love with this country, with its people, with its warmth, with its hospitality. So Pakistan is a completely different country from what you will see on your 6 o'clock news. And if you want to know Pakistan, but you're not in the mood to come over here, and I can't blame people who don't want to right now, the best thing to do is find Pakistanis in your community. They are active. They are great members of American society. They are into community service. They are into business. They are into, you know, all sorts of interfaith movements. Talk to them, make friends with them, find out about where they come from and what life is like for them at home and in the United States, their new homes. This is the best way that we can get to know each other.
Very nice. And we can simply round it out there. Do you have a takeaway message for our audience? But if you didn't, that if you don't have an additional one, you certainly provided a heck of one in that recap.
I think I just want to tell people, don't prejudge us. Talk to us. We are friends. We will be friends. That is the way it has to be.
How do you address the people that will say, well, I'm not prejudging you, I'm watching the news. And so the news is giving me real information. So I'm not prejudiced. I'm actually acting this way based on real information.
I would say that go to the source of your information. Who's writing that news? Who's producing that news? Who's filming it? Who's analyzing it? If it isn't Pakistanis, it's not real news.
Ah, nice. You've been listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been talking with Bina Shah, writer of English fiction and a journalist living in Karachi, Pakistan. She's the author of 4 novels and 2 collections of short stories. Ms. Shah, how can our listeners find you and your work?
All they have to do is Google my name, Bina Shah. You'll find everything there, Twitter, Facebook, my website, my blog. I've made myself deliberately easy to find.
Very nice. Thank you so much for being on the show.
It was a real pleasure, Frank. Thank you.
Along today's journey, we've discussed arranged marriages, divorce rates amongst Pakistanis in Pakistan and the United States, and violence towards women in Pakistan. I hope you've had as much fun as I've had learning and discussing arranged marriages and Pakistani culture. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/relationshipflove, on Twitter, at Mr., that's M-R Frank Love, or at franklove.com. On behalf of my producer, Felita Leggett, my assistant producer, Eniza Stewart, and my engineer, Jeff Newman, keep rising. This is Frank Love.